comes Irving. Drives on Thompson. Irving spins. Puts up the shot. It's good! Kyrie Irving with 3.4 remaining. And the Warriors call timeout. Irving does it again to the Warriors. Porter can't find anybody. He gives it to Wall. Working against Bradley for three. John Wall! What a shot!
He just plays the game, but I'm not going to let them treat us that way. You know, I know Pop's got pedigree and I'm a young rookie, but they're not going to rook us.
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 Literally crapped out, Tom Doolittle and Stoll?
No.
The leader of the Giro d'Italia had to stop halfway.
Oh, I saw that, yeah.
A couple of days ago and just drop his guts. It was horrendous. He lost about 2 minutes, but luckily he had like a two and three quarter minute lead. The funny thing is that he dived off the bike and started pulling off his jersey, and no one could like.
what the hell's going
that's
on?
Not the part you shit from, bro. But presumably you had some fucking onesie thing going on.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Anyway, enough about Tom Dumoulin's movements.
So anyway, I've had a few people say it'd be interesting to have a chat to him for the pod. So I might do like a B-side balls
B-side.
Pod.
B-side, I see what you did there.
Pod and have
O-side.
Maybe. So you excited for the finals?
Nope.
You think it's going to be a cakewalk?
Yep.
Mm.
That's the thing. I mean, I've been trying to manufacture. This is the Balls Podcast, folks. I'm not Bezo. He's Bezo.
you are Bezo.
Third week I've done that. We either back announce it not at all, or we back announce it with me saying I'm Bezo. That's not true. I'm the doc. He's Bezo.
You should know that by now.
He's the one with. Well, maybe you.
No, I was saying you should know by now that you're not Bezo.
I don't know who I am anymore, mate. After another five of these fucking Dortmunder export big cans of fucking Pilsner, I could be anybody.
You could be Ray Warren.
Could be anybody. I could make a lot more sense than that, Fiat man. Who was talking?
You, about the Warriors. Why you're not excited?
I've been trying to sort of get, you know, think this is going to be great. This is going to be cool, despite the fact that last year the Warriors would have won comfortably if they'd had Steph and Draymond on the court in full functional format. But this week, when the Cavs just completely shelled a game because they were too fat and lazy and arrogant and hubristic to actually put in, it made you think these guys just don't have it, and they're just not going to have it when the shit really becomes difficult. Mm. I know they can aim up, and I know that they are the ultimate light switch team. Much more than that Kobe Lakers team. But they just, if you lack that attention to detail, if you can't switch on for a fucking conference final, what the fuck is wrong with you?
Well, the other one that scared me was when their coach was saying, oh, we weren't really prepared for an Isaiah Thomas-less side. And I'm like, you guys are supposed to be the best fucking team.
Oh, well, yeah, but I don't have such a problem with that because, I mean, where is the tape on Boston Celtics
he missed games without
Isaiah Thomas? There is no tape on that game.
He missed like 20 games this year, though.
What does that team look like?
Yeah, but like you should have a plan. It sounded like they just went, well, let's roll the ball out and just beat them, and that's bullshit at that level.
Well, that bears out exactly what we've seen.
Yeah.
And in the game they lost, they looked sloppy as shit. They were throwing bullshit passes. They were trying step-back threes, and it just all wasn't working. And in today's game, they're doing all those things, and it was.
Mm. Yeah, and that's why I don't think it'll be a sweep, because I think there'll be a game where LeBron will go off and Kyrie will go off, and it'll all come together. But I agree with you. I just don't think they got the discipline, and not necessarily their top players, but the Warriors are just so fucking deep. Like if you do everything right and you shut down Steph and KD, then that means Draymond's going to be open for 20 threes in a game. And if you're going to leave him open for that many threes, he'll beat you. Like,
look, they're getting stuff out of JaVale McGee.
Yeah, that's right.
It was the only weakness that we thought they had, and it's the bench, and they've been able to get
enough
meaningful bench minutes out of David West and JaVale McGee. It's over.
Mm.
It's flat out over. And the Cavs flat out deserve to lose because they've not treated this year in any stage with the respect that it deserves. They haven't treated the regular season with any respect. They haven't treated the playoffs. They haven't even treated the fucking conference finals with any respect.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem with that is that you have to train to be on. Yeah? I mean, you know this. You've trained teams.
Yeah.
You have to get in a mindset of being on all the time so that you can be on all the time. Because the moment that you even waver in your onness, you're going to get fucked by a team like the Warriors. And that's what we're going to see inside five games.
The problem with the East being the way that it is that in the back of their minds, they sort of know we can cruise into the finals without having to do too much.
They don't need to be on.
Yeah, it's not like we have to prepare. Whereas the Warriors are like, fuck, we've got to beat. The Warriors are actually being amazingly lucky. They've had a sort of very Eastern Conference finals where they've just rolled through. But that they couldn't prepare that way. There was no way that they knew that they were going to have things break the way they were. Like, okay, Portland, you would expect that series to go that way. But Utah is a team that's made its first finals and was overmatched. And the Spurs looked like they were going to give them a...
They played hard.
Yeah, that's right. They actually went out and destroyed them. Like, they didn't just sort of rock up and drop a game here. They actually went out and fucking made a point of wiping the floor with them in four.
But for most of, like, for three quarters out of every one of those games, Utah was within 10. They were still trying bloody hard to keep it competitive. So they've had those. They've been getting those reps up with high-intensity basketball. And the Spurs never take a play off. So they've had those reps there, whereas the Celtics are shit ass. Let's face it.
Well, the Celtics, like even Bill Simmons, who's the biggest Celtics home there is, like there was two games where he was just like, this team's just not trying. You know,
he was despondent on Twitter. He was in today's game. He was basically saying they've given up, and I don't understand why. And I, as a fan, I don't find this acceptable. You know, he wasn't going full Stephen A. Smith, but...
No. I think, like, he plays up the homerism. You know, he's actually a pretty good basketball mind.
It's what got him his gig in the first place.
And, like, what he's worried about is that, like, sometimes... Like, the Spurs are famous for it. They trot out, you know, a water boy and Matt Bonner and they... and they'll at least have a go. They'll get smashed, but they'll have a go. You know, and Pop famously pulls his starters if he thinks that they're not fucking trying. You know,
But that's also because he believes in the people who he has on the bench. He doesn't believe there's a great step off. He doesn't believe in you know. I mean, let's face it, the difference between the best players in the league and the end of the bench isn't as high as the media would have you believe. I mean, there's not. It's a bit like European football. Paul Pogba isn't worth. We've talked about this before.
Yeah,
isn't worth 100 times more than a bloke who signed for 100th of his transfer fee. What people are getting paid is not necessarily what they're worth.
I think the thing is, you've got to have one of those really gun guys to take you over the final level. Like, and the Warriors have got three, and you could probably argue four.
Five,
yeah. Like, if Iggy decides to turn up for the finals and isn't too injured.
What do you mean former finals MVP?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I mean, first off the bench is a finals
firepower.
And it's not like he's the finals MVP from a decade ago who's, you know, having a last role before he retires. He's like 2 years ago finals MVP. The only thing is the fact that LeBron managed to take him to six games 2 years ago with nobody. I just don't know whether
didn't have KD then, though.
No, they had Barrett, Harrison Barnes.
Which is like having lacking half a player.
I'm not as convinced about that as you. I think Bogut...
Well, except for the fact that, you know, when they won the finals, it was because they took Bogut away.
Yeah, but I think a lot of people last year reckon that Bogut going down was a pretty big thing in that game five, that he just, like Tristan Thompson, could do whatever the fuck he wanted after that.
Yeah, yeah, that was the deciding factor, not the fact that Steph was on one leg and Draymond was sitting
kick someone in the nuts,
twiddling his thumbs.
Mm. Oh no, yeah. I don't think so. I think it was one of the factors. Actually, that'll be the thing, because I reckon they're going to go all out to try and fucking niggle Draymond. That they see that they can, you know, try and push that again. But I think
what do you got? If you're the Cavs, what do you do? You go at Draymond's head. Not with elbows, but with side.
You hope Kyrie goes supernova for seven games.
Well, you can probably rely on Kyrie to do a lot of bullshit high leverage ISO stuff, because that's literally what he does and what he's done in four or five games against Boston. He was it looked like LeBron wasn't going to get the record from MJ because Kyrie was literally going to score every fucking point in the second half with ridiculous torsional bloody drives to the hoop. It was stupendous.
The interesting thing is, though, the Warriors haven't done much Durant-Curry pick and roll all year, and Kyrie is just a woeful pick and roll defender.
Yeah, I feel like that's the kind of that's either going to be the white elephant of the finals, or it's going to be the thing that decides the finals. But it's something that people have been talking about forever. Like, you know, KD Curry pick and roll, and whenever it's happened, it hasn't really worked out at all.
Mm.
It's actually been kind of shit. But it's either because they've kept it in their back pocket for when they need it, or it actually doesn't work because KD and
because he doesn't really like setting screens. But the other thing is,
also he's literally made of twigs.
I have a suspicion that Golden State would like to embarrass Kyrie Irving in this finals, like really fucking take him down a peg. I don't think they enjoy the fact that he's hit those two big game winners.
I don't think it's as much. I don't think there's a lot of ego in it because Golden State are pretty much a machine. I mean, let's set aside Joe Lacob's ego, which sits it over and above everything else. I mean, Joe Lacob again has come out with some light years ahead style commentary about how they're looking forward for revenge, but I don't necessarily believe that sentiment exists at the level of the coaching
staff. If they lose again this year, you could almost do you could put a PhD.
Oh, they have to win.
If you could put a PhD assertion in that karma actually exists, and here is Exhibit A: dickhead says stupid thing, his team loses. Dickhead says stupid thing, his team loses.
Because there's no other reason. It's kind of one of the annoying things about the fact that the Warriors will probably, if not definitely, win, is that he's going to get validated this time. This time he's going to be right. And that's irritating.
Yeah.
That his belief that his team is actually, that he is light years ahead as an owner, and therefore that permeates through the rest of the league, that he is going to get revenge for his team losing from 3-1 up, even though this is a different team with probably one of the best players in the entire league, magically grafted into place, his shitty beliefs are going to be validated. But then again, there's always people on the internet with shitty beliefs, as Twitter will tell you any hour of the day. You can't correct them. You might as well just let them blither off into oblivion.
Yeah, just let it wash over you. I think there would actually be people within the Warriors and the coaching staff and the players who would actually be laughing at him for some of that shit.
So, I don't know whether they're laughing. I think they're more likely to go, fucking shut up. Just wait. Can you wait till the fucking parade? Till the parade. Do it then.
10, 15 more days and you can say whatever the fuck you want. And we can say
End of June. Draft meetings.
We could say you were drunk. It's fine. It doesn't matter.
I'll
tell you what.
St. George can't play.
JR crashed the press conference, and I'm like, oh, geez, I wonder whether they're going to be able to sober him up for the first game of the finals, because he looked toasted. He looked so toasted.
Well, they've kind of enjoyed it, I think. And I think they have a lot more fun than the Dubs, but the Dubs are going to win.
It was a very interesting article from Howard Beck this week about the way the Spurs versus the Dubs go about things, and how like they're sort of driving towards the same things, but they go about it a very different way. And despite the fact that they share quite a bit of their DNA, like people have gone from the Dubs to the Spurs and the Spurs to the Dubs, And yeah, I found it. And the other one that was really interesting on that same podcast, I think, was the fact that the Spurs have a fucking CIA database on every single player. Did you hear that little tidbit?
Oh, it doesn't surprise me. I mean, Pop.
Yeah, he's an expert. He's an expert. But right, like obviously I expected them to have like a coaching database where, you know, coaches write down anything they notice and scouts notice about players. But their database is like anything a journalist says about a player, anything, you know, you might overhear in a bar, like, and they give it a rating of importance and who it came from and how time sensitive it is and all that sort of stuff. But they have a full on fucking CIA style database built up on every single player in the league. I just like the level of detail that they go to is, you know, I think people just, some people think the Spurs are just, you know, a Pop yelling at people and that's why they do well. I don't think everyone understands the level of detail they have underneath it that sort of makes them what they are.
No, it's Pop yelling at people because they didn't pay attention to all the detail. That no, that's right. In the dossier that was slid that, under their doors like four days ago.
There was a, I listened to that Richard Jefferson and Channing Frye podcast with the sideline reporter from Fox Sports. They had one with Tim Duncan.
Sideline reporter with Fox Sports?
For the Cavs, Ali.
Oh, is that? I assume she was. I hadn't heard her. I assume she was the fucking team media human.
No, she works for Fox Sports, and she does
she's
all.
She's an outsider. Okay, I didn't realize that.
She does all. Well, you know, like they're like the people that follow a team. They fly on the team plane and stuff. They have their own section in the team plane.
Yeah, but they're not necessarily team employees.
No, they're not. They're not
because they don't.
No, they.
I mean, for some clubs they are because it's not done through a big corporation like Fox. But
anyway, she does the editing and pushes the buttons and stuff like that. So and it's on
the producer.
It's on that undefeated. It's on LeBron James's media sort of
uninterrupted.
Uninterrupted. Sorry,
that's his one. Yeah, undefeated is ESPN's black sporting one. Stuff. Black so, culture and sporting stuff.
So, yeah, the one with Tim Duncan was hilarious because, you know, Richard Jefferson had a very, very unhappy time at the Spurs. So it was just 30 minutes of Duncan just sending barbs Richard Jefferson's way about all the times Pop just destroyed him in the 3 years that he... And he was... They recorded it at the Spurs practice facility and he was like, oh, normally we have a few beers or a couple of red wines when we do this, but I was too scared to bring it in case Pop walked around the corner and Duncan's like, you play for another team now. He's like, I'm still fucking scared. Duncan is an amazing guy.
Because you know the fucking room's bugged.
Yeah, that's right. He's a really polished media performer for a guy that never talks to the media.
They are recording the conversation anyway. So maybe don't worry about who else is recording the conversation.
That's right.
Just be subscribing on fucking on SoundCloud. Because that podcast was, of course, the one where Kyrie dropped his knowledge about the how Earth the world was flat.
Well,
didn't realize, but Draymond is also in on.
Oh right, that's on the same imprint, is it? It's actually really.
No, he came out and said, you know, how do we know it's not? It was like,
oh really? He's a flat earther as well.
Like you look out over the horizon on a fucking plane, and it's a curve.
Oh man,
maybe that's a giveaway, cunt.
Jesus
Christ, you're a fucking moron.
The NBA is doing its best to play down that we are the most woke league in American sports.
We also have some of the most ill-educated runters in the fuck, or some of the people who smoke too much weed and got a little bit too. How do we know anything that we know though? I mean, how do we know what no even is? You know that the kind of
the known unknowns
with when they were fucking 17 and suddenly became arch philosophers. Like, I mean, what is knowledge? What is human experience?
There's always one of them. It's like, dude, I just want to watch cartoons.
Dude, yeah. Can we just?
Hey, speaking of,
let me watch Orgasmo and drink my fucking beer.
Speaking of well planned organisations that you wouldn't have assumed straight up, the Australian Cricketers Association look like they've pulled an absolute fucking Swiftie on Cricket Australia. They look like they've had this planned out for a while.
I would not call it a Swiftie. I would call it a completely justified, legitimate, well-planned operation to say, right, if you're going to fuck us, we're going to make sure that we have everything in place so that when you fuck it for yourselves, we're doing okay. Yep. So they've got a company sorted out to handle their IP rights, which is a good reminder to Cricket Australia that they won't have the cricketers' IP rights.
Mm.
It's like when they tweeted something about, what do you reckon about Adam Zampa's new haircut? I tweeted something back saying, what do you reckon about paying your talent, you fucking morons? Because that's basically where we're at. I feel like, apart from brain-dead fucking morons, the public tide is beginning to turn with this shit. People who are paying attention know what's going on here.
Well, I think that the first time it popped up outside of Crick Info that I really noticed was when Warner started saying, well, good luck winning the Ashes without an Ashes team. And then it sort of hit the mainstream media a bit. But, you know, the fact that they've got a hardcore right-wing anti-industrial relations chairman and then, you know, the next move they made after the IP rights was to go and get the ex-industrial relations minister from the last Labor government on their fucking team. You know, that's like going up to a bear and poking it with a fucking blunt stick. You know, there's no code in that message. It's like, we're fucking here for the long haul, mate.
You might as well be Henry Ford sending in strike breakers to break people's fucking ankles.
Mm. The more and more that it comes out, the more professional the Australian Cricketers Association looks, and the more like a bunch of fucking, you know, Lord and Master, you'll do what the you peasants will do the fuck what you're told, Cricket Australia looks like.
I think the sporting public are smarter than they would have been given credit for by behaviour like this, and even by the... I even sense a changing in tone even from the right-wing press that would normally fall into line behind Cricket Australia.
Mm.
I mean, it's been people like Gideon Hay, but there's been voices popping up in that side of the press saying, but this is an inequitable deal and there's no way on earth that the players should take it because they're taking less than what they've had previously, plus there's more income coming in. As you've always pointed out, there's a fucking big Bash League deal coming around the corner.
Well, the other thing that...
This is craven fucking greediness.
The other little tidbit that came out on... and if anyone's not across Daniel Brettig, I'm not sure how to pronounce his last name. Yeah, his work on Crick Info, go and read his shit every day because he is fucking deep, deep into this stuff. One of their arguments was that there would be more money for the grassroots, but that cut for the grassroots right under the new agreement is, it's not a percentage. It's just a number that Cricket Australia can pull out of their fucking ass. So if they wanted to give the grassroots 7%, they could. Under the current deal, it's 22% for the Shield players and the Test players, and then 22% for the grassroots. The grassroots actually get a set percentage as well. Under the new deal, Cricket Australia could do whatever the fuck they wanted. They could cut the grassroots money and no one would ever know because it's not set at a pro rata part of the total pie.
What I don't understand is why they're so desperate to rake this money back. What do they want to do with it? What are they actually saying? Like, are they planning to launch some women's competition we don't know about that sits outside the pay scale here? I mean, or is it just to buy themselves a more, you know, fresh flowers every day in the office.
The word that I've heard is that it's that media thing that they want to set up.
They want to launch their own media thing and try and blow ABC Radio and everybody else who they want to be a media company by themselves.
Yeah, within
which is stupid and unhealthy and dangerous.
Within sort of 4 or 5 years, they don't want to be beholden to 9 and 10 and the ABC. They want to control everything about the game. And they don't, you know, if they want to cut Crick Info out because they're writing little articles about the ACA, they just fucking put their foot down and they control the whole package. That's what they want.
They want to be BCCI.TV.
That's right. They basically want to be BCCI Mark II. And
BCCI and, don't do a very good job.
Yeah.
Well, remember we had this discussion during the Indian tour where they were releasing confidential pitch mic conversations to make the Australian team look bad because they had the power to, because they were the promoter, but also they were also the media organisation.
Yeah.
So you end up with dodgy or, fucking...
Or you end... You end up with commentators that won't say anything against the Lord and Master, like, you know, Ian Chappell.
Which is what we have on Nine now anyway. But
yeah. Well, yeah, but like Ian Chappell can say the fuck whatever he likes on Channel 9, you know, but he pulled out of Indian tours because he had to sign an agreement saying you won't criticise Sachin Tendulkar or you won't criticise the BCCI. And he's like, get fucked. If Sachin Tendulkar's playing a bad game or you guys have done something and the crowd's poor, then I'm going to say whatever I want. They're like, well, no contract. But this is where I get really these guys are supposed to be the best and the brightest, right? These businessmen on the board. Look at why basketball is thriving in the States. It's thriving because there's a really interesting, diverse media. Like, if you want to follow basketball...
Why do you back and contend one of the things you said? People on boards are there because they're the brightest. No, it's because they were fucking lucky. Most of the time you make a success out of business because you're in the right place at the right time and you happen to have a bunch of advantages go your way. It's not because you're clever. It's just because you're lucky, because everybody's clever when you come to that level of business. It's like it's like being in bloody any field of advantage. Everyone has got basically the same skill base. The ones who succeed are generally the ones who just have this shit break their way.
Yeah. Because, I look at the NBA. Like, the NBA is so diverse. At one end, you've got your hot take merchants like Stephen A. Smith and Skip Bayless and all those guys. And there is a section of the market that loves that type of, you know, bombastic sort of way of following the game. But then on the other
end, tough under pressure, just like Stephen E. Smith. Asshole. He is such an asshole. Sorry, that's a throwback to last week's Regurgitator special, folks.
On the other end, you've got your cerebral type writers like Zach Lowe and Howard Beck. And if you're interested in the game from an analytical and a really deep dive sort of standpoint, you can get in it from that way. If Cricket Australia run the whole fucking media landscape of cricket, you're going to get one type of writing. It's going to be boring as batshit. And if I can't read something about the games that are actually going on, then I've got no fucking interest in the game. I'm just going to wash out. It'll become boring. And no matter how good your product is, you need, you know, the product's only on for a certain amount of time. You want to fill the other bits of time with interesting content that made people more invested in the game. I just think it's such a dumb move to try and limit the media output of your sport. I just don't think that's... And like, it's not like you don't have a good example. The NBA is growing every single year. You know, there are other sports that do this as well. Why would you... it just baffles me. It just doesn't make any sense.
No, it's a lack of understanding of actually what pays the bills. What draws people to you? Nobody wants to hear a whole bunch of, propaganda. We just don't. We want to read intelligent, in some places, contrarian takes. And you can't just have a whole bunch of people singing off the song sheet of the fucking of but, Cricket Australia, you know, cricket.com.au.
But it's not just
There's
us.
Nothing that those cunts have to say that is relevant because it's.
It's not just us that suffer, though. It's also the bogans that want an Australian version of Stephen A. Smith, because that guy can't flourish under the Cricket Australia model either, because you can't have, you know, Ian Chappell going, Stephen Smith is the worst fucking captain I've ever seen of Australia. Like, how can you have a little red-headed white kid captain? Like, they just wouldn't allow that under their regime. You know, no
criticism. Stephen Smith and Stephen A. Smith ever met? And I think, what if they job swapped?
That would be it.
You had Smudge doing first take. You had Stephen A. Smith
saying, facing up to bit.
It's preposterous. Crab Rangoon! Things of that nature.
Stephen A. Smith facing up to Ben Stokes would be quite amusing, actually.
I'd just sledge him. His sledging game would be amazing.
Amazing. That's right. He'd get out first ball, but he'd give a good send-off as he walked off. Dear. Yeah, anyway, that's all I had to say cricket. Other than go and read Kimber's excellent T20 analytics article, if you haven't read it already.
It was kind of a grab bag of thoughts that he'd had, but it was kind of an update on... He's been writing quite a bit about... And some of the other cricket info dudes have also been writing about next-gen stats and data in T20, and it was almost like an IPL update in how some of the ideas he'd picked up from the Big Bash League had been expanded upon in the IPL in terms of matchups, in terms of when you bat people, in terms of, you know, what people do and all that sort of shit. So that's actually kind of cool.
Yeah, it makes me wish that you could see the IPL in Australia, but you can't. There's no one... It's I don't think it's even on Fox.
Well, it's on Sky in New Zealand, so it must be on Fox.
No, I don't think so. So someone said someone said the other day, I saw on Twitter, there's another year that no one in Australia broadcast the IPL.
Meh, I don't know about that, because it's been on... if it's on Sky, it's inevitably on Fox, because they tend to chip in for the same deals. There was a year where it was just on YouTube, because nobody had bought the rights. I watched a couple of games early, like highlights, and then there were more interesting shit on. So,
well, the thing is, you sort of probably need to follow it at a certain level to at least understand, you know, who the teams are and which personalities in which team.
No, I think. I mean, for a lot of time, when I wasn't paying attention, all I'd do was just tune in and cheer for the players I liked.
Well, that's
sure it. Some people watch Premier League football like that, or La Liga football, like. Tune in to watch a Barcelona Real Madrid game, and just they've heard of Messi, so they cheer for Messi, and they've heard of Ronaldo, so they cheer for Ronaldo.
Oh, did you have a listen to that little story about the Brazil shirt that I sent you?
No, I've probably heard it before. I've had other things to do.
Oh, it's just really interesting that they had some audio of the 1950 grand World Cup final, well, not World Cup final, but the final game that they lost to
World Cup final.
No, I think it was.
No, they lost to Uruguay because they were hosting it.
They lost to Uruguay, but all they had to do it couldn't have been a final because all they had to do was draw to win the World Cup. So it must have been like a league table format.
That's actually a bit earlier, I think, because they got beaten by Uruguay at home, and it was traumatic for everybody involved. Let's put it that way.
So that you know, they reckon there was 250,000 people over capacity in that new stadium that they had
in the Maracanã.
And so they were wearing their white. They used to wear a white strip, and they wore the white strip in that final. And it was so traumatic that that they basically held a competition to design a new strip because they never wanted to wear that white shirt ever again. And some
I've never
do.
Heard that before, so I have questions about the legitimacy of everything. Down to the fact that they haven't even figured out what the format of the final was.
Yeah, these guys, mate, they're spot on. They do their research. So
I've never heard of them. Anyway, that must be good. Let's talk about football. So the EPL finished up, which is the English Premier League, for those paying attention at home. And all the teams you thought were going to win won, and all the teams you didn't think were going to win didn't win. We had the most embarrassing and disgusting player farewell I've ever seen, where John Terry, who's played for Chelsea for many years, choreographed his own farewell by saying, "I will start and then sub me on 26 minutes because I've always worn number 26, and I can leave and have everybody clap me off and all the rest of it." And that's exactly what happened. And it was vomitiferous. It was the most shameless bucket of shit you could possibly imagine. And the saddest thing was that the manager of the other side, which was David Moyes of Sunderland, was in on it. David Moyes was fired shortly afterwards. I know it wasn't for agreeing to this,
but I feel like
it should have been. Because it was making a fucking mockery of everything that is worth making a mockery of.
All I care about is, do Arsenal still have a coach?
Yes, Wenger is still in. and the best part is that there won't be... the best part, let's put it this way. Because of the horrendous events in Manchester and the crackdown on, you know, anti-terror stuff, the chances of there being any Wenger out planes flying over the FA Cup final this weekend are very low. They'll probably get chased out the sky by RAF tornadoes firing missiles at them. So they finished fifth. They missed out on Euro, on the Champions League. But they are still playing the FA Cup final, although they are down a couple of centre-backs with a few key injuries, which is going to be problematic for them.
Because
Chelsea won the league, and then Antonio Conte got a Gatorade shower and his hair stayed on, which I think is his finest achievement for the entire year. The job he was being lined up for in Italy has actually gone to the current manager of Roma. So it looks pretty probable that Conte will remain at Chelsea unless Barcelona come in over the top with some ridiculous offer, because they're still looking to fill a vacancy. They'll probably sign Valverde from Atletico Bilbao. So I think Conte will be back for next year.
I've always wondered about whether a team in the Premier League, like if you're sort of in that 3-4 range and you've realistically got no way of winning the league, are you better off dropping down to fifth and sixth and not playing Champions League and not have to...
And having your time off.
Yeah, like not commit the resources to the champion.
It's a really valid point. This is the first year where it's really made a difference, but Chelsea's run to win the league was absolutely aided by the fact they didn't have to play in Europe at all.
Mm.
Whereas Liverpool finished third, they didn't have to play in Europe at all either. It's been the first year where that's been palpable. The idea that fixture congestion from the midweek European games has really made an impact on your form in the league. Normally, it's just sort of seen as an inconvenience that people get around. But
yeah, I just wonder whether Arsenal finishing fifth rather than fourth means that, you know, like...
But they still got to play Europa League, which is basically the same amount of fixtures, but in a less lucrative and less important competition.
Which probably means you're not going to play as many of your good players. Like, if you want to, you can rest good players in the Europa League, whereas you probably can't do that for the Champions League.
True, but you've still got to fly out there and fly back, and, you know, you might be flying. I mean, the Europa League, there's teams from fucking Kazakhstan, so you're talking long flights.
Yeah. Yeah.
Long, long flights. So the man of the moment appears to be Antoine Griezmann of Atletico Madrid, who Manchester United are chasing. He's this arsey winger who's very good. He's previously said that he would never leave Atletico Madrid, and earlier in the week, might have been 2 weeks ago, he said that he would only leave Atletico Madrid to go and play for the New York Knicks.
And then I saw this. Keep going.
And then happened to turn up on the sideline of the Celtics-Cavs game in a Celtics jersey, having been photographed training jerseys with CJ McCollum of the Trailblazers. So what we're learning from this is
you can't necessarily
pin Antoine down to a position. He's probably well set up for a position in politics. But Griezmann has said earlier in the week that his chances of going to Manchester City are actually 6 out of 10. But his chances of staying at Atletico are actually 7 out of 10.
So he can't add up either.
Not only is he inconsistent, he can't fucking count. he's inconsistent, hubristic, can't count, and is incompetent. I think he's perfect for Phil Jackson. But it looks like he'll probably end up at Man United, where his inability to count won't really matter, I expect.
I think the only one better than that was that kid at the Cavs game who had his, you know, the Cavs shirts that they drape over the back of the chairs, and he'd obviously gone along with his dad or his uncle or something on the condition that he'd support the Cavs. And then when the camera was on him, he's like waving and the camera's on me, and rips it up to reveal a Golden State jersey underneath and started pointing.
Shit. There's actually one worse than that I saw, which was Leonardo Bonucci, who's a centre-back for the Juventus, who won their fucking umpteenth title in a row and who will be playing in the Champions League final in a week or two. He's got two kids, and he was on the final day of the season and are going out to have the whole celebration and the awarding of the trophy and all that sort of stuff. And he's got one kid in his arm and he's dragging behind the young bloke, and the young bloke's bawling his eyes out. And he's really distressed about the whole thing. And people have sort of said, why is he so distressed? It turns out later, the reason he was so distressed is that he was dressed in a Juventus shirt. He's actually a Torino supporter.
He didn't want to wear the shirt.
And he was disgusted and horrified that he had to wear this piece of shit. And his friends were gonna see him as a Juventus supporter because he's a Torino supporter.
Oh, that's classic.
Like, son, you're pretty fucking cool.
And kids will get upset about that shit. That's for sure.
They should too. They fucking should. Major corruption sausage going on in Spanish football. So the former president of Barcelona is likely to go away for a fair old while. He's up on charges. Neymar and his dad are supposed to stand trial. Messi and his dad have both had an appeal up, which they lost. So both have 15 to 21 month sentences, which is suspended because in Spain, you anything under 2 years is suspended. But this is all about dodgy transfer bungs and money laundering and tax evasion and shit like that. The cops raided a bunch of other players like Di Maria and Pastore. So there's a lot of dodge going on in Spanish football, or at least they're cracking open the dodginess that happens in Spanish football that they just let under the rug in English football. Because a lot of this is about stuff like image rights that are getting paid to dodge taxes. They're getting paid into like Cayman Islands bank accounts and shit like that. So it's all peripheral shit. I mean, image rights is what the ACA are striking over, isn't it? I mean, that's what they've set up this company about, is image rights. The fact that you can stick your player's face on the latest fucking EA Sports video game. That stuff's actually worth a shitload of money.
Yeah, well, that's what, you know, at one stage, that was what was going to bring down college sports in the States was...
give it time.
The fact that they were using all these sort of very popular college sports athletes on their video games and not paying them a cent for it. Now all the college sport video games are just generic Kentucky players, you know, deliberately made not to look like anyone. So,
exactly right. Mm. Exactly right. Although they'll probably keep trying to fake it as much as they can. Mm. You know, a bit like those unlicensed computer games that always have the people who were similar enough that they were recognizable, and they always kept the player's name field editable, so you could always just change the name later.
Put in whatever you liked, depending on what the transfers were this week.
Just finishing up on the football. There's been a storm in a teacup in Australia about the so Liverpool came down to play a exhibition match against Sydney FC, and ABC Australia got the rights to cover it, and they trotted out a couple of stand-up comics with fringe interests in football and put together some fairly shambolic and embarrassing attempt at comedy coverage of the game, which football fans have been incredibly fucked off with. I mean, the game was a joke. It was an exhibition match, which Liverpool won 3-0. But I think a lot of it comes from the fact that a lot of the resentment comes from the fact that football fans are used to being the whipping boy of Australian sport, and it's always been treated as a joke, and you know this wouldn't happen to AFL. You know it wouldn't happen to any sport that had respect, and the disrespect, I think, was felt fairly sharply, which resulted in a lot of soccer Twitter getting really upset and all up in its fifis.
I did see a fair bit of that.
There was quite a lot of fifis being getting up and in. So that was entertaining.
I see the Strikers are making trying to make a comeback in the A-League,
which would be lovely because they're the only they're much more well grounded
Brisbane wise
player support than the Brisbane Roar, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, I went to that grand final, their last grand final. That was quite interesting.
20 years ago.
Yeah, in the old Lang Park with the concrete. Was it Sydney United, I think, was their opponents? So
I think it was one of the Melbourne teams, but it could well have been Sydney United.
I think it was Sydney.
Sydney, Croatia.
Because I just remember we were in the you know, sort of what would normally be one of the rougher areas for State of Origin, and there was this little wedge of Sydney fans that had come up, you know, traditional football fans that had come up for this final and were just in this bay of people like me that were rugby league, normally rugby league supporters were like, fuck, a Brisbane team's in a final? Hell, we'll go to that. Yeah. And just were absolutely fucking giving it to them in a very good-natured way, but I think they were a little bit overwhelmed by the amount of attention that they are getting, and that was the end.
I don't think. Keep in mind, these are the people for whom soccer violence in Australia was invented.
Mm.
I don't think it was. I'm not entirely convinced it was Sydney. It was Sydney United, if that was the case, because these people will kick off under any circumstance. These are the people who would. How many did they have flares?
I think there was flares. Yeah,
flares are like job one with Sydney United. So Sydney United is still around, I should say.
And would Melbourne have been 96. It was Sydney. Was 96, 97. 25th of May 1997. Brisbane Strikers 2, Sydney United 0.
It was Sydney United. There might be some. There might be some players you recognise in that Sydney, because Sydney United, the Croatian teams, Sydney United and Melbourne Knights, formerly Sydney Croatia, Melbourne Croatia, turned out a lot of good footballers. Well, I'm pretty like Mark Viduka.
Well, I'm pretty sure Frankie was on in the Brisbane side, and Alan Hunter.
He was.
Yeah, I can't remember who else was on that side.
But it'd be good to see that the Strikers back, because they do have a genuine. They're, I mean, when they did the A-League thing, they wanted to get away from teams that had a strong NSL background, and particularly the ones that had ethnic support. Although, having said that, the Queensland Rule were based out of the old Queensland Lions, which was the Dutch team of South Brisbane. So that was a little bit dubious.
Yeah, but
it would be rather lovely to see them get up, because they are a real football team with grassroots support and a history. In the same way, it'd be nice to see, you know, rather than inventing a club and setting its marketing agenda, it'd be nice to see a club like a Marconi get into the A-League. But that would require pro-rel, which is unsustainable in a market, the geographical size and market smallness of Australia.
Mm. Yeah, it's funny how some of these clubs just sort of, you know, get whitewashed, I guess, a little bit like the Super Rugby, where all the place names got taken out and it was just, you know, you followed a mascot rather than an actual area, which was a bit stupid, so.
Yeah, but Super Rugby's pretty stupid anyway, because it's just bad.
Super duper. I'm sure it's great for New Zealand and South Africa.
I don't know, even New Zealanders are going, this is fucking unwatchable shit. I mean, the thing is, the Lions tour is about to start next week. Mm. And,
well,
and of course, yes, there's the usual amount of, you know, chest-beating advertisements and all the rest of it. I was here for the last Lions tour. I feel like the buzz is half or less compared to what it was last year. And part of that's because New Zealand's gotten over its fucking mental block with rugby. Having won a couple World Cups,
yep,
it's finally calmed the fuck down, and it doesn't take rugby quite as seriously as it used to. But that also means it doesn't pay as much attention to rugby as it used to. And also the fact that all the rugby is on pay TV means that the market for it is actually condensed. No one really wants to talk about it, but rugby is not as big as it used to be. In the same way that all televised sport isn't as big as it used to be. Every televised sport is facing a condensing market. And no sport really wants to put their hand up and say, oh shit, this is actually a thing that's going on.
Yeah, it comes. Look, I've been thinking a lot about this, about basketball, right? With, like, say the Warriors, right? They've got this new stadium and they're going to charge lots and lots of money for seats because they can, because there'll be people that want to pay a lot of money to go and see a good team in that market. But at what cost to the way your team's perceived and, like, the fan base that's going to stick with you when things go down? Because, you know, the NBA's set up in a way that you can't be up forever unless you're the Spurs. So, what happens when you turn into the San Francisco Knicks and, like, all those fair weather people, like, it'll be the Clippers' problem. All those fair weather people will just disappear. And I just wonder whether they're sort of giving themselves a really big boost now, but whether that's sustainable long term, and whether they think about stuff like that. Do they think about having a section of the crowd that they try and keep very low cost, because it's those low cost people
you've made this point a few times, and I think it's a valid point, but I think they're only going to, I think they're going to react to that problem when it happens rather than predict it.
Mm.
Even though they are, as Mr. Logan says, light years
miles ahead,
they are going to discover that they are not light years ahead when the arse drop. I mean, maybe they're going to produce a fucking Spurs-like dynasty that lasts for 20, 30 years.
Yeah.
Maybe that's, and maybe it's going to be built on one moment of incredible fucking luck, which, like, getting KD, KD going on the market when they happen to have this huge cap spike, in the same way that the Spurs were not the shortest price odds to get the shortest
Tim Duncan.
The Tim Duncan draft pick, but they got it.
Mm. Well, the funny thing is, though, that they
tipped it all off.
Lots of teams get that transformational player, but not many teams turn that into 20 years of sustained success. Like,
nah.
I think I saw that the other day.
New Orleans have got it right now. And how far are they going with it?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Like, the Spurs have never, since Tim Duncan got drafted, the Spurs have never drafted higher, like, their own draft pick than 20. Never.
No.
That's just fucking insane. Like,
they haven't missed a playoff.
No. Well, you look at you look at Philly and the Lakers, who have basically owned the draft for the last 3 or 4 years, and you just go,
part of it was through choice, but
and at least
they didn't have a choice.
I think Philly and the Lakers are both look like Philly have stuck with Brett Brown, and the feeling I get is they will continue to stick with Brett Brown even though they haven't had that upward swing yet. Because they understand that you've got to ride the, you know, you've got to find that good guy in the bad times who will then be good enough to take you into the good times as well.
And they also know it's not his fault.
No, that's right.
They suck and it's not his fault. I mean, he's doing the best he can. So, and I think they've seen enough, like when Embiid was on the floor, that they could actually be pretty good.
Well, and the fact that that team, a little bit like what Simmons was complaining about the Celtics today, is the 76ers, Philly, even though they have been crap, have always had fight, you know. They've always tried to win games and they've always played really hard. They just haven't. They just never had any talent on the floor. So, you know, if you can do that year after year with a coach as with a crap team, a little bit like what the Nets are doing this year. So, tell me a little bit about Nicky Hayden.
I was going to leave that to last, but we can talk about it now. So Nicky Hayden passed from the injuries that he received from a bike accident, accident.
I just think that it's really sad that a guy, a little bit like what happened with Steve Smith, even though that wasn't, you know, that wasn't an accident where someone else hit him, but, you know, these guys that do something really fucking dangerous for a living and then end up being killed by a freak accident in another sphere.
Steve Smith?
Steve Smith, the downhill mountain biker. He got killed. He was riding a motorbike, riding a trail bike, and the trail bike slipped out underneath him, hit a tree, killed himself.
I wasn't aware of that. I was thinking McGarry, but there's another one.
Yeah, another guy.
Well, this is how motorbike guys die. I mean, the great Norik Abe, who was a Japanese tear ass of the 90s, got cleaned up by a truck while he was turning at an intersection on his fucking scooter a couple of years ago. It's like, what the fuck is this? Andrea De Cesaris, the guy who was famous for crashing in Formula One through the 80s and 90s, such that he was referred to as Andrea De Crasheris, died in a traffic accident on his motorbike. Some fucking truck cleaned him up as well. People who have these ridiculously risky lives that get killed in the most stupid, mundane, fuck-off, awful ways. It's just, I mean, I mean, if you die, you die. It doesn't really matter how you die, does it?
No.
But it's still, it just seems, it's just not right. There's something just totally not right about it. So, yeah, and there was a lot of really nice things said about Nicky Hayden. This, obviously, when you die, generally, that generally comes up. But he was just a genuinely nice and well-liked guy. All his teammates always thought he was a really good dude. And when he won the title in 06, when he was the first dude to beat Rossi in forever, even Rossi said, Nicky's got me, you know. Even though Rossi had won more races, he said, Nicky deserves it. He's just a tremendous dude. Of course, Rossi was his former teammate, so they had a lot of, they went back a long way. So there's a lot of, there's a lot of sadness and hollowness. I mean, ironically, Rossi did himself a significant mischief overnight. He was training on a motocross bike and came off it, and there was some concern that he'd broken a bunch of ribs and done himself some internal injuries. He seems to have passed a passed the X-ray, so it's just a lot of bruising and contusions. But it's a reminder that you've got to watch out what you do. Well, shit away from time.
Did you see the story today that Aaron Rodgers bought all his offensive line ATVs?
Oh, fuck. That's
and that's what someone said. Do you really want the guys that are out there protecting you to be off doing high risk activities outside of the sport? Don't you think they're doing enough risk? Oh, man.
A mess. But speaking of footballers who, I mean, the thing is, no NFL player gets paid what they're worth. I mean, they make, the NFL makes a lot more money out of its TV rights than the NBA does.
Mm.
Obviously, the NFL makes less on the gate because they have 16 games a year, whereas the NBA has 82. But the NFL's television package is worth $40 billion over 9 years, whereas the NBA's most recent one was $24 billion. They've got 53 players per roster to split it up from. All of this is just to say, but they have a less percentage of revenue sharing compared to the NBA. All of this is to say that Gronk, Rob Gronkowski, the tight end of the Patriots, just got a renegotiated 1 year contract worth $10.75 million, which compared to an NBA salary would put him the 91st best player in the NBA, in between Monta Ellis and Teletovich. Teletovich is so dull, I can't even remember what his first name is. Probably Mirza or something.
I think it's Mirich.
He plays for the Bucks.
We traded him. Wasn't he a Suns player? I think he was a Suns player for a while.
Possibly. He's an end of the bench, fucking Balkan 3-and-D guy.
Yep.
Not even sure if there's any D. It might just be 3.
So what's the theory there?
Gronk provides more value than the equivalent of the 91st player in the NBA. But that kind of tells you the gap in player worth between the two sports.
Yeah. Is that just because there's a lot more players?
More players. And also in the NFL, they don't have guaranteed contracts. And they have a culture that players, you know, next man up. There's a lot more players. You can always replace them.
Well, I think too, like even a role player can have a much bigger... Like, look at Kelly Olynyk. You know, he won a Eastern Conference... Eastern Conference semi-final game off his own back. You know, those sort of guys can make a big influence. And all, you know, if you win one game that you shouldn't have won, that might be enough to win you a ring. So, that's why people take punts on giving guys $20 million contracts, because you just never know when one of them might come off. It was interesting listening to a podcast about the draft, and they were talking about the Nets, who've got the 24th and the 20th pick, and they were basically saying, you know, they got nothing to lose. They should just take the biggest fucking risks that they can at the 20th spot. You know, don't pick a guy that's been in college for 4 years. Pick some guy that's had fucking 2 years of injuries
They don't need solid talent. I mean, they can get solid talent through the through the free agency process. They can always find a reliable end of the bench dude. What they need is a win or bust.
You know, like they need a Rudy Gobert who got picked 28th or something. You know, you have a swing at one of those guys. and yeah. and they come off, all of a sudden you're not the worst team in the NBA anymore.
But if it comes off, you suddenly look like the smartest fucking front office in the history of the universe.
And if it doesn't, it's the 24th pick. What did you expect?
So good luck, Sean Marks. I hope that works out for you, Kiwi.
Mm.
Speaking of Kiwis who had shit work out for them, which I'll get to. Your friend and mine, Fernando Alonso. There was the qualifying for the Indianapolis 500 this weekend just passed. So they have like a once at a time 4-lap average qualifying thing. So they each go out, do 4 laps, come in, and it's the average over the 4 laps. So Alonso, and then that happens on their Saturday, and then on the Sunday they all come back. The fastest 9 get to run off for the first 3 rows of the grid, and the rest of them qualify for the back half. So you kind of lock in your
section,
which part of the grid you get to be in, but the actual times get set on Sunday. So Fernando Alonso, rookie, bit of experience in Formula One, made the fast 9 and didn't even fracture his pelvis, hip and ribs in the process. Unfortunately, Sebastian Bourdais did. He had a very large sausage and absolutely munted himself. Having said that, it was an accident that would have killed him 20 years ago, because literally the thing kicked sideways and then corrected, and the correction spat him diagonally straight off into the fence at 220
miles. Oh, Jesus, you're giving me goosebumps.
But his legs are intact. His hip and pelvis are fucked, and he's busted a rib. He was in hospital for 4 days, and then he said, I'm out of here. He left hospital after 4 days because these dudes are fucking mad.
So how did Alonso go in the actual race?
So in the race is next weekend, but on Sunday they all came back, and of course, he didn't manage to damage himself, Alonso, but he did need an engine change because Honda are fucked in Indy just as much as they're fucked in Formula One, although they are quick. He set a 231.3 mile per hour average.
Holy shit. Oh, that's round an oval.
4 laps of a 2.5 mile oval.
Yeah, okay.
We work out what that is. That's about 4 kilometers. So that's about 16 kilometers. He was averaging 231 miles an hour.
Sheesh.
With 4 corners every 40 seconds or so.
That's fucking quick.
It is. And so that was quicker than anybody who has been on pole for the past since 2011, since this generation of car has come in. Having said that, he was still ended up 5th on the grid.
Wow.
The pole winner was New Zealand Scott Dixon, who racked a 200. It was the only one who got into the 232 mile an hour averages. So he did that, which was his 3rd pole position for the Indianapolis 500. He has won from pole position. He has won the Indianapolis 500 before. He won it in 2008. And then later that day, he and Dario Franchitti went out for a meal and found everything was shut and were going through the drive-through at Taco Bell and got held up by 2 fucking 15-year-olds with guns and lost their wallets. So you can go from being pole winner in the Indianapolis 500 to handing over your wallet to some punk and drive through at Taco Bell within a couple of hours.
Such an American sporting story, isn't it?
It is. So, yeah. Fuck America. It's a fucking zoo, isn't it?
That's just fucking bizarre.
The fact that you've won
that.
Dario Franchitti, the dude who's sitting beside him, has won a couple of Indy 500s as well. They literally go. Question is, what are you doing in the fucking drive-thru at Taco Bell?
Yeah,
it was Sunday night. Literally everywhere else was closed.
Can't understand.
McDonald's is a sponsor of theirs, but the McDonald's was shut for renovations. So they had to go to fucking Taco Bell.
Oh, that is just unbelievable. Oh, you've just won one of the biggest sporting events in America, and you've got to fucking go through the drive-thru.
You've won the pole for the Indy 500.
Yeah.
They'll race on Monday morning. So Fernando will get to go from fifth, and we'll see how it turns out. But he's a chance to win the bloody thing, which would be amazing. But I'm hoping Scott Dixon wins because
he's a Kiwi.
He's a Kiwi, good dude too. I mean, the other Aussies in the field, Will Power racing for Penske, although the Chevy engines aren't quite as strong, And the dude who's subbing for Sebastian Bourdais is James Davidson, who is cousin of Will and Alex Davidson. So Will Davidson's in V8 Supercars. Alex Davidson has been in V8 Supercars, but their cousin James is running is been in the States for quite a few years, and he's subbing for Seb Bourdais, so he'll get a run in the 500 as well.
Sounds good.
That's good work if you can get it. What would you rename Margaret Court to? And would you rename it to any? This is actually a philosophical question I've been punching around.
Well,
somebody is a fantastic sports person, but later turns into a maggot cunt, just the worst person in the world. Mm. We're not saying Margaret Court's the worst person in the world, but she has shitty fucking bigoted shitty views.
Fundamental Christian views.
Fundamental fucking gay-hating views. But you've named the thing for their...
For their sporting time.
Yeah, you've named it for that. Don Bradman was a cunt, but he was a really good cricketer. Roland Garros apparently was a massive cunt, but he has an entire tennis fucking lantern. I don't know where you draw the line.
Well, after a certain amount of time, like once she's dead and not writing, you know, shitty little letters to the editor.
I just propose we stop publishing letters to the editor because nobody needs to hear that shit.
Well, it's like just turn off the internet comments for a start.
Yeah, I think nobody, I mean, I'll be happy with nobody's voice being heard ever.
Yeah.
Apart from my podcast.
It's more problematic when she's alive and she's basically leveraging her name being on a very large piece of infrastructure to get an opinion out there. But she would get that opinion out there anyway because she's basically leveraging her legacy to make that opinion.
Yeah.
But she's only doing herself damage.
She thinks she's doing... I mean, there was someone took a photo of some flyer that they had up in the church that she's the pastor of, which is kind of, we need to find out how the gays are doing it and stop them from brainwashing our kids. Literally was that in dot point form.
We need to stop...
They're like evil mind control agents. There's like some kind of psychops operation that we need to stop because they're evil and we need to stop them from corrupting our children.
It's a great advertisement for how professional sportsmen that get into it young don't develop properly, isn't it?
Well, I reckon there's a higher proportion of fundamentalist religious people in sport because you have, in the same way there's a higher proportion of fundamentalist religious people in other fields that depend on individual talent, like being a fucking heart surgeon. Being a surgeon, you've got to have incredible talent. And these people disproportionately believe in a God because obviously I've been blessed with my God-given talents and I'm a fucking genius, therefore I must have been created. It couldn't have been a fluke. And it's absolutely, I mean, of people who teach in med courses will talk about the fact that there's a lot more fundamentalist religion popping up in their courses. To the point where that, you know, you have to explain to them gently what evolution is because they don't believe in it. It's the same true in sport. I mean, fucking Antonio Conte crossing himself when he won the league. You're the manager of Chelsea.
Goal's famous for that, isn't it?
Doing a good job, yeah. But Ayrton Senna believed that God was his co-pilot and he could do no wrong. Mm. It almost becomes like a delusion they have to buy into. At the level, I'm not saying that religion is a delusion, although I happen to believe religion is a delusion. But at that level, it is actually a delusion they have to buy into in order to get into the headspace to have the kind of dominating performances that they do.
I remember when Bennett was the Broncos coach the first time around, and he used to make his players have an apprenticeship or they had to do some sort of work. And like, obviously that would be a lot harder now because they just earn so much money.
And they don't have time.
Yeah, but like his whole idea was that they needed some grounding in the real world, otherwise they would become assholes, basically, and would be a lot harder to manage. So,
but I mean, Margaret Court in the '70s wouldn't have been earning great coin. I mean, she would have had to have, and I feel like she's come to this late. I feel like this is,
But I think
we all become arseholes the older we get. We become more conservative and we turn on the youth.
I think though when one thing takes all your focus for such a long period of your life, it's hard to become a developed, well-rounded person. You know, there's a narrowness of focus that sort of excludes you becoming a nice, well-rounded person. I'm not saying everyone's like that, but there's a lot of people that are like that.
It's not healthy to be that obsessed with yourself.
Mm.
Believe me, I know.
And on that note, let's come back and talk some tunes.
Well, the other note I was going to leave on was this, clearly she's mad for the flange and has been covering up for years.
Mm, that's possible too. Yeah, it's just depressing. All right, Doc.
We were the Bulls podcast. He was Bezo and I was the Doc. Follow us on Twitter and like us on iTunes.
Yeah, give us a rating. That'd be fun.
That was an attempt at a back announce. It wasn't good.
We need to work on that.
The non-existence one we normally do.
Definitely give us a shout out on Twitter.
Yeah. All right. Say good day. We really enjoy engaging with people who, particularly if you listen to the first time, say, I think everything you had to say was shit. I was like,
yes.
Thanks, Dad. I know.
See you, Doc.
My dad doesn't know how to use an internet. What am I talking about?